In this week's episode, Angela loved the violence, I respect the professionalism of a hitman, JJ goes on with his life, Samantha asks us all an important question, and Mike didn't pick a dog. This is Wild at Heart. Okay, so let's see here. So this is going to be Samantha's movie.
Yeah.
And then, is it me again? Have we gone full circle now?
Yeah, it
goes back to you.
Too. Okay, cool. I know what we're watching, because we got to have a comedy after this thing.
This was a comedy.
Was it? Okay.
It was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Okay.
With some heavy moment, a heartfelt comedy.
Yeah. Okay.
True love.
So we're talking about a heartfelt comedy today on Funsphere Movie Club.
Good film.
Hi, I'm Josh.
I'm me too. Lula.
I'm Sayla.
I'm the good witch.
So that makes Michael the bad witch.
Misfortune. Mariana.
Yes, Mariana Fortune. And today we are talking about a film called Wild at Heart. This is, for a lot of people, I bet they've never heard of this film before. I hadn't before today. This is a 1990 American romantic crime drama film.
Oh.
Yeah, written and directed by the old Funsphere pal himself, David Lynch. It is based on a 1989 novel of the same name by Barry Gifford, and it stars Nicolas Cage, Laura Dern, William Dafoe, Crispin Glover, Diane Ladd, Isabella Rossellini, and Harry Dean Stanton, and basically everybody that's in Twin Peaks or ever was or was near it or, like, you know, was working on the crew at that point, bought a sandwich near where the crew was filming. They're in this film too. All right, so Samantha, this was the film that you suggested to us. So tell us how you became acquainted with it.
Oh, Skid had me watch it.
Okay.
But it was fine because I want to watch the David Lynch movies anyway. So this just happened to be one that we watched.
Okay.
Because you had to purchase it because it's not streaming anywhere. And I wanted to inflict it upon y'all, so.
And inflict it you did.
Yep.
All right, and then JJ, you are also familiar with this film, correct?
Yeah. I watched it probably mid-2000s, like 2005. Kind of going through a Lynch kick, and I was like, yeah, let's watch this one.
So is that the only way you can encounter this film, is if you actively are on a Lynch kick and you have to seek it out, it seems?
I think
it's not streaming anywhere. You can't, like, stumble upon it.
And I was going to say, the fact that you guys both bought it from a company, Shout Factory, which are known to only print kind of rarer films or cult classics, stuff like that, is pretty interesting. All right, how about the other side of the room? Angela, had you ever seen this movie before?
No. Definitely not, but I haven't seen many Lynch films or a lot of Lynch stuff at all until Mike and I watched Twin Peaks.
Okay, gotcha. So, and then what about you, Mikey?
Same.
All right.
Didn't know anything about it going
in. Gotcha. All right. So, Samantha, was this the first film of Lynch's that you saw? Or the, like, second, third? Like
third.
Okay.
I mean, not counting Dune.
Not counting Dune. Okay.
So, I saw Mulholland Drive first.
Okay.
And then we watched Eraserhead, which I think is more fucked up.
Hmm.
In a different way.
Okay.
And then, we watched this. So, hopefully Blue Velvet next.
Gotcha. Wow. All part of the 15-year plan around here, folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, JJ, you said you saw it in the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And was this, like, where was this in the Lynch catalog for you? Like, mid? Did you see it? One of his first films? Later films?
It was later for me. We went through this weird phase because I was in college. A lot of people were like, you know, let's watch. There was three movies that I remember watching a lot. One was Requiem.
Okay.
For a Dream. And the other one was Mulholland Drive. And then after we watched Mulholland Drive, the great thing about that movie is we try to have this conversation like we knew what was going on. And we still, to this day, I still don't know what happened in that movie. And so then a couple of my friends in class, we would just get together and watch David Lynch movies. And I'm like, oh, let's skip class. Let's watch a David Lynch movie, which, yeah. So yeah, that was one that kind of came up. We watched it and went back to school and
you know, just went on with your life after this.
Right.
I mean, I could definitely see this film being like, okay, there was life before this film and life after. And all right, so we're going to talk about it. It's, as Samantha said, it's kind of fucked up film. I am honestly just sitting here trying to determine for myself whether or not I liked it.
Okay.
And it's very divisive. I'll say that it's got a sitting at a solid 64% on Rotten Tomatoes. Apparently, Roger Ebert like hated this film, and this won the best film for the Cannes Film Festival in 1990. Also, surprisingly, financial success.
Well, I feel like it probably cost $10 to make.
It cost $10 million to make and earned 16.
Did 9 million of that go to Nicolas Cage?
I think they just promised him all the cocaine he could snort. And knowing Nicolas Cage, he's like, go time. Yeah. So, and like I said, they just borrowed everyone from the set of Twin Peaks.
Yep.
So they got all those actors for basically scale. He'd probably just tell them, hey, guess what? In this week's episode of Twin Peaks, we're pretending that you are in North Carolina, but it's really California. And some of you are going to New Orleans next week. Don't worry about it. You're just going to go. You'll be back in time to see your families. It's great. I think Lynch probably tricked everyone into this film somehow. But to be fair, apparently he was tricked himself into this film. So he had a buddy that was talking to the author of this film, and he's like, hey, I've got a book that's almost ready. It's not quite ready. You want to take a look at it and see if you think maybe it'll be a film someday? So he read it, and then he's like, said to Lynch he wanted to executive produce it. He's like, do you want to read it? He's like, yeah. And then Lynch goes, wait a minute. What if I like the book enough and I want to direct it? He's like, that'll never happen. Guess what? It totally happened. Mm. So this is, again, this was written and directed by him. So he did his own screenplay and things like that. Apparently he changed the ending of the book.
Good.
In the book, apparently the characters break up permanently, and David Lynch was like, "Nah, that's lame." So I'm gonna have them get together and be happy.
That made for a great ending.
Okay, so where do we start on this movie?
I feel like we should start at the beginning, where he killed someone within the first 45 seconds, maybe one minute.
No,
self defense.
In Fun Sphere, we rarely, rarely ever start at the beginning.
We also never tell what the movie's about.
No. Those are things that we do not do. But you know what? I'm going to humor you today. We will start at the beginning today.
Thank you, because it was the best part.
Okay. So you think the best part of the film was in the first 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. It was cartoonish level violence. Like... Okay, so we've done films like we've talked about Die Hard, we've talked about RoboCop, we've talked about stuff like that. I think this is more violent than RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that if you're going to hire a hitman, right?
Yeah.
And he pretty much told the entire plot how he was going to kill him, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What's the point? Why didn't he just stab him in the neck?
He was very confident.
And also makes me think, like, are hitmen just always, like, maybe within 10 to 15 feet of you at any kind of organization? Or, like, you just stop, like, hey, are you busy right now? No? Do you want to perform a hit for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, just, because it seemed like she just grabbed that random guy. They never bothered to say, I totally invited him here and was setting him up. No, it just seems like she slipped him, like, $20 and he was down to kill somebody.
Yeah, this is the same movie that she said she was going to stand by the phone.
That's
like,
correct.
For days and wait for a phone call. There's, like, no social media to hire a hitman or anything.
No.
That.
She's just like, nah, I just found a guy.
Well, it seems like she's sort of acquainted with that world anyway. She knows Santos pretty well, and he's clearly involved.
He is involved.
Maybe it was one of his events.
It was probably his referral.
Well, and they call that hitman by his entire name.
Yes! And everyone knew it! That's another reason I was like, is this guy just, like, hanging out? Because everybody's like, oh, there's Mr. Lemon. He'll do a hit for you for, like, $15 if he's, you know, they're in close proximity to you. You know, if he has to go out of town, it's going to cost a little extra. Jeez. And then, like I said, Angela mentioned this, 45 seconds into the film, you are seeing one of the most brutal beatdowns in media that I can think of. Like, literally, I was like, it sprang to mind RoboCop for me for level of violence.
I think what got to me for illustrating the level of violence was the actual showing of, oh, his head is caved in and that is brain matter seeping out, because they usually just let you know, oh, there they are, blood's around them. It's like, no, they gave you full access to that gushing brain wound.
Yeah
it was gross. I haven't actually watched that scene either time.
Oh, you missed it. It was great.
I didn't want to.
So I was also thinking, like, and they keep going, like, they could have ended it at like 15 seconds, because he killed him real quick. But then he picked him up and just started abusing the corpse at that point.
Gotta make sure.
Yeah. I was thinking of The Simpsons where he goes, stop, stop, he's already dead. Oh, God. Okay. All right. Well, somebody else got to say
Well, and then adding the point that he just points.
Yeah. Yes!
And just, it was like, I just murdered this person. No problem.
Yeah.
That weird, not even a point. It was like a hook finger. I don't know what that was.
He's like, well, that's next.
I know who did it.
Because it the hitman told me.
Yeah. he like laid it all out. Yeah. He's like, you know, it's almost like he came up to him kind of like apologetic. Like, look, sorry, I got to kill you. This lady over here said you were doing the following things and you got to die. Sorry about it. You know, so that's awful. That's professional courteous.
Yeah,
really
letting you know, like, this isn't random. There's a
reason. No, this is not personal. I am literally doing it for the following reasons.
I would have rated him a 3.5 on Hitman.com.
What's the scale on Hitman.com?
5.
Yeah, he didn't complete the job.
It's like
he accidentally died.
So he gets like 5 stars for courtesy, but like 2 stars for unfortunately completing the job.
We got to get in the middle there.
Yeah.
Or maybe a 5 out of 5 on reverse Hitman. Yeah.
Rolled a nat 1, hit himself, crit himself.
Oh, and then it decides, you know what? We're going to put him in jail. We're going to take a picture of him. We're going to use this again at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then it's like, guess what? Road trip movie.
Yeah.
At that point. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, let's see how many people we can hire to try to kill these two. And we're going to drag it out for 2 hours before anyone like even really takes another shot at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were driving and they had to catch up.
I guess, yeah.
Well, they caught up and then they had to stop and take a dance break. Yep.
Yes.
Can't forget that.
Yep.
And then they had to sleep, but their sleeping was weirdly, it looked a lot like sex. what else?
Yeah.
That was about it.
And then they just kind of like hang out at this weird town at the end of the movie. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, Big Tuna.
At a hotel.
Hey, I remember my question. Okay. What dog did you guys picture?
Okay. So for real, like honest, German Shepherd is the one that immediately I go to when someone says dog. I'm like, German Shepherd.
Okay, okay.
I pictured my dog. It's just a hound dog.
That makes sense. That makes sense. About you guys.
I didn't picture a dog. I was too busy thinking like, this is one of the weirder roles I've seen him in.
Yes.
You haven't seen a Racerhead, huh?
I also didn't picture a dog. But then he said, oh, you probably pictured some other dog. And I was like, maybe I pictured a Jack Russell because he said they barked a lot. And my, like, we have a hound and she doesn't bark at all, hardly.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not a big dog, very small.
Nice. I kind of just pictured, like, the shape of a dog, like a dog silhouette. Okay. But it was not... really, it was somewhat formless, so...
dog mass.
Just...
dog emoji.
Yeah, just dog emoji. Just the shadow of a dog. Maybe with pointy ears.
And yes. That was the name of the band they went to go dance to.
And then did you... like, right after Mr. That guy poses the question about what kind of dog am I describing here, did you see the guy come up to the table and just do, like, the fire thing?
Yeah,
for,
like
no reason whatsoever? Flourish. I mean,
whenever you've got a trick like that, you've got to show it off.
I guess, like, you got to find your openings where you can take them.
Guys,
I don't know if, like...
you guys are asking all these questions, but did we forget that this is a David Lynch film?
No, it's very obvious it's a David Lynch film. Full of all the normal Lynchian things of, like, animals doing wild things in the movie. Just we're going to focus the camera on someone in the background and then we're going to hold the shot for anywhere between 35 seconds to 2.5 minutes.
My favorite was when the mother was chugging her martini and looking dead ass in the camera.
He's like, she's like, will you
chugging,
say cut?
Chugging, chugging.
Yes.
She finished it like a champ.
Yep. I didn't know this. So Laura Dern and Diane Ladd. Diane Ladd is Lauren Dern's mom.
Oh, in real life?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Who'd she play?
So the mother and daughter were mother and daughter.
I mean, she looked just like her.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good casting.
Yeah. Speaking of casting, so do you think that Lynch just said, all right, all of you have to keep up with Nicolas Cage being a ham the entire time? I will give someone a bonus star sticker for the day if you can out-ham Nicolas Cage. Did anyone go home with a star?
Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe.
I think if... yes, ma'am.
Laura Dern also did. I mean, the shrieking at the beginning. I was sitting there watching. I was like, she has to be having the most fun to just like blood curdle scream over and over and over again. But then they all did it during the entire movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I think they got that assignment pretty well.
Especially Lauren Dern's mom. I think probably her part was... put the lipstick on your lips, but just a lot. And she's like, I got a better idea. Everywhere but my lips.
Well, and then she was. There was that one scene at the end where she's just rolling around on
an ottoman, yes.
She was dying.
Yeah, she was melting. She's the Wicked Witch.
Okay, let's talk about that. I mean,
that was very strange to me.
So apparently the only reason there are any analogies or mentions of the Wizard of Oz in this film is that the Wizard of Oz is one of David Lynch's favorite films.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the book or the characters.
Okay.
He injected all that into the film.
That makes sense.
And I think he did a pretty piss poor job, to be honest.
It seemed like it fit in his tone perfectly.
Okay.
Like his typical tone. Also, oh, I was thinking that like her visions or whatever of her mom as a Wicked Witch was just her kind of on some level being aware of the fact that her mom killed her dad.
Yeah, I think that's where they were talking about like that laugh. Like that was actually, I thought, kind of a subtle hint to it. Like, I was like, wow, they actually kind of did that really well. Like, I don't think we need her on the broomstick, to be quite honest. Like, you know, and I don't think we need to constantly be changing the main actress's shoes to red for important scenes and things like that. And
well, don't forget the mother's shoes.
The mother's shoes also changed.
Oh, yeah. They're pointed up all of a sudden. Yep. Yeah.
That was fun. Mm.
I think the story about her cousin was probably the most unnecessary part of the movie.
I wish she was in it more.
I also wish she was in it more. I would have rather
watched. But it had no relevance.
And to be fair, like, so some of their conversations they have in bed struck me as really funny because they had like that first one. They were like literally talking about the dangers of climate change and like cities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then she tells the story about her cousin. And then they're having like the discussions about like, what else did they all talk about? Like,
him not having parents,
The lack of parents, like they're like literally having, like these would be the arguments in like super serious films, and they're just like, you know what? In between, like people doing flame magic tricks and asking what kind of dog you're looking at, and then having a bunch of cowboys and. Some big ladies, like getting ready to make a film. Yes, thanks, Angela.
I'm Samantha.
God,
what's wrong with you?
Not everything.
He only knows about one lady at a time.
The ladies got him flustered.
They did. Yes, they got me flustered. So I was like, in between all that, like you have these like serious conversations.
They're just chatting.
I guess
that's just what they talk about. They're weird.
They're meant to be.
Yeah. But it is funny how even like Nicolas Cage is like to Laura Dern's character is like, you're weird. Man. Yeah. You think of weird stuff.
But he likes it because he's a freak.
Yep. They're all freaks.
When are you guys leaving that conversation at the park? You know, this guy's making the movie here. You know, they're all just hanging out, you know. Yeah. I mean, probably 5 minutes into it, I'm like, guys, I got to go.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
As soon as the guy asked me what dog, I'd be like, you know what, guys? early morning tomorrow.
He's only looking out through one eye.
Yeah.
I can't believe you guys aren't even talking about that old guy that came up to him at the bar that had the really high-pitched voice and was just making sounds. They don't even react. My favorite thing about that and the dog is how they just kind of like, nod and listen, like it's not weird at all.
But then they react separately. So like they went to the hotel room, she goes, what was that? And I'm like, how are you the weirdest person saying what was that to also weird people? Yes. Like you don't have that much awareness, I don't think.
Yeah, as soon as she said that, I was thinking to myself, what is this?
wait, this doesn't fit into this film. You guys aren't supposed to ask that question. We're supposed to ask that question. Okay, so I'm going to bring it back to the violence for a second because...
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. We're going to talk about quickly this film was almost X-rated.
Yeah, I can see that.
And apparently the version we watched with the over-the-top violence is the edited version.
Stop.
Yeah, the version that was shown at Cans has apparently never made it to DVD or Blu-ray.
Wow, I wonder what it was like.
So you want a specific example? We're going to talk about the very last act of violence.
Yes.
Well, no, not the very last act, the penultimate act of violence, where William Dafoe's character gets shot 6 times and says, you know what I'm going to do about this? I'm going to just fall onto a shotgun and decapitate myself, which I'm going to give like, okay, I've played Doom. You know what? That's a pretty good Doom kill right there.
Yeah,
it works. So apparently that is severely edited. they added the gun smoke and stuff like that just so you couldn't just see the head just fly from the body.
Hmm.
Yeah. Just think that is what they decided to cut back on.
I mean, I still saw it though.
Yeah. Yeah, we all still saw it.
I'm confused. Yeah.
They basically tried to add a censor bar to get it to an R rating.
Oh.
By that. With the gun smoke, it's a little bit of a censor or a screen, I guess.
Okay. Well,
by that point in the film though, I think we're all desensitized because it's so violent in the very beginning. And then by that point when he shot himself, we were laughing.
Because it was hilarious.
Yeah. We talked about how violent the beginning. Yeah.
And I mean, so. Violent, let's be real, though. So we were laughing at the beginning violence, too.
Yes.
At least I was. I was going, this is freaking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just the, you know, the lack of a plan. You know, William kind of told this plan that he had, but there was no exit strategy. They're getting shot, whatever. And then they didn't even prop or prep their pantyhose or anything.
No. Nope.
And the only thing I can think of is Raising Arizona.
Yes, yes.
So you got
too.
A panty on your head, you know. And then, yeah, let's put a whole bunch of jelly in a pantyhose and throw it on the side. It looked gross. Yep. But, yeah.
Well, the plan was that he was going to kill Nicolas Cage and then get out of there.
Right,
right.
Yeah. It wasn't really even about the money. It was about the hit.
Yeah, and he failed spectacularly at
so
that.
So all hitmen, when they try to kill Sailor, they end up killing them, getting killed themselves.
I mean, the only person who got killed by a hitman was the detective.
Yeah, Johnny Farragut.
Johnny Farragut, yeah.
Yeah, so then
they apparently edited that scene down, too. Apparently,
which is unfortunate.
Well, so, no, apparently during the test screenings, this is after, I think, Cannes. So they were making the edits. Oh, just another quick aside real quick. The film was finished one day before it premiered at the at the film festival.
That's great.
Oh, wow. So some of those cuts make a little bit more sense now that it's like, oh, no, I got to get this thing done. My homework is due tomorrow.
The Love Me Tender scene.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, so apparently during the test screenings, like, he had 100 people in there. And all of them walked out during the torture scene. All of them. And he's like, huh, that's weird. He's like, well, let me make a little adjustment. So he had a second test screening. And all 100 people walked out.
Wow.
So he made an adjustment one more time. And he's like, only 60 people walked out this time. So he's like, I knew I had it right then and there.
I guess because that character is really the only sympathetic one.
I was gonna say why? Because,
well, we don't know what happens in the scene because they've taken all of it out. Like, it was apparently a 10-minute scene of the torture. Like, so before they decide to kill that guy, apparently, it gets wild. And I will say this: this is the one film I think. I hate to speak for him, especially since I've never met him, but Mr. Lynch is actually quite candid about his feelings of why he did this and stuff like that for this film. He's like, I put in all the Wizard of Oz stuff because I love Wizard of Oz. He's like, I consider the movie a happy ending. You know, when usually they're like, what did you mean by this? He's like, you know, I won't tell you. But he's like, nah, it was a happy ending.
Maybe this is like, he explained this one and then he was like, I'm not explaining anymore.
He was tired of it. He's like, come on, people.
He's like, sorry.
I think this was his reach into classic Hollywood, like playing into the over-the-top violence and insanity and sex and violence. I mean, that's really all it was. When, I mean, the other stuff, I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of his stuff, so you guys would have to tell me.
I mean, like, just all the random, like, crazy background stuff, that is textbook Lynch.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But the shooting off of Willem Dafoe's head.
Yeah, I think all that's pretty normal, too. Like, if you watch Fire Walk with Me,
okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of violence and sex. And Mulholland Drive, it's the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to know how Nicolas Cage got involved.
So, apparently, he was the first choice. And so here's how Lynch pitched it to him. They both ate at the same restaurant. He just came up to him and said, hey, Nicolas Cage, you want to work with me? And Cage was like, totally. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I got this thing. Can you read this? He's like, yeah, okay. And that's it. It wasn't this like huge casting thing. He's like, he was the first person I thought of. I saw him while I was eating a ham sandwich. There he was, you know, and boom.
Do you think it was the dance moves?
That sold Cage?
No, that sold Lynch.
I don't know if he had seen Mr. Cage dance prior to this.
I bet it was the Elvis stuff.
I bet it was probably the Elvis stuff.
So I was reading about how, because there were so many different cuts in the film, they let Nick Cage, they were like, you don't have to do your method acting. You can, we were trying to, and I was like, wait, what? That was, there's no method acting to that. But the snakeskin jacket is his own. He brought that. He asked if he can wear that.
Stop.
Yeah.
Can I wear this?
they probably came to him like, Mr. Lynch, sir, Mr. Cage won't take off that jacket. He said he won't be in the movie unless he can do that, and if he can also do a flip out of a car.
Then his roundhouse kick.
He's
got to
do a bunch of roundhouse kicks.
But that was dancing. He did not use that in fighting at all in the movie. It's like, let's go dance, and he's doing that roundhouse.
Yeah. The one he gets in a fight, and he gets the shit beat out of him.
No, there's two fights.
Okay, the fight in the beginning. Yeah, no. He punched that guy a lot.
He just confuses dancing and fighting. Maybe he just doesn't know the difference.
That's true.
Like the guy at the club that bumped into his girl is like, I was trying to dance with him. I punched him? Oh, geez, I'm sorry.
Oh, in the club?
Yeah.
What about the guy who was in the front doing the worm or whatever?
Yeah.
I was like, why?
Why not? Why? Yeah.
To heavy metal, like thrashing music. Yeah.
Again, they want to dance. And
because your safest move in the pit is the worm.
Yeah, definitely.
The juxtaposition of heavy death metal and then going to Elvis made me feel like those characters, like, everyone was so drunk, they're thinking they're having this great time, and we're all sitting there watching these people who think that they're like on it with the choreography, on it with the singing. We're like, whoa, those people need to go home. Like, it was very, no one at a death metal kind of concert would be screaming.
Unless, and here's where I think it is. I think Lynch says, you know what, we're gonna shoot this part like it's a musical. And then everyone gets involved in the music. Like all the characters in the background. I bet that's exactly how he sold that shot. He's like, I want you all to act like you're in a musical and the main character is now singing, and so you're going to become the chorus.
It feels like a bingo card, and he was just checking boxes to try to get bingo. It's like, okay, I need some like karate fighting.
Yep.
I need killing very quickly. I need guns. I need a decapitation and blood. I need Elvis and a musical scene.
The funny thing is that could either refer to both David Lynch or Nick Cage. And they probably have the same bingo card, if I had to guess. Who do you think gave the copy to the other?
They probably like both had one, and then they were like, what? This is the exact same thing.
They became best friends during this film.
Every time I see like Elvis or Nick Cage even acting like Elvis, I can only think of Austin Butler now, who was in the Elvis movie and now is like stuck in Elvis mode. He can't get rid of the accent. He's acting like he's always been like that, even though he's from Los Angeles. And it just cracks me up.
Ooh, he went way too deep into the method.
He's stuck. He's stuck.
Nicolas Cage's he's protege.
That's what I was thinking. Like, even because he's in Dune, he's awesome in the new Dune.
Okay.
Dune.
Dune 2?
Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah. In Tuned. Yeah, he's great in that. But he's very strange and because he got stuck in Elvis mode, I do see him becoming another Nicolas Cage.
Okay. So do you guys think when Dune 2 comes out on Blu-ray, they're going to have a bucket edition? They have to, right?
Oh, with the weird hand thing? Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was one of my best jokes of all time.
It really did. It went well. We went pretty far with the bucket.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
SNL did. SNL wrote a song about that bucket.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't know what else to bring up about this film.
That she is pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
she had an abortion after she got raped.
She did.
Yeah.
By her uncle. Who her mom? She's like, my mom didn't know, and then there was the memory of her mom attacking the uncle.
Yeah, and then also clearly arranging for his death. Yes.
Yeah, the mom apparently has a lot of hitman connections.
Well, maybe you know what.
I mean, Mr. Lemon was around, and, you know.
She killed the uncle. Yeah. She killed the dad. Mm-hmm. That's the line of.
Did they ever give a reason why daddy had to go?
Just probably because he took up for the uncle. That's my theory.
Mm,
so or we should money. Be sympathetic. Oh, yeah, probably money.
Yeah.
But we could be sympathetic to the evil witch of the East. We wicked could, witch
yeah.
of the East.
Yeah, we could.
So I got to bring this up because it's going to bother me. You know how they're making, what's that play wicked. Called? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Wicked.
And what's the young lady's name in it?
Ariana Grande.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Did you guys ever see the Chappelle Show?
No. Well, yeah. Yes, but okay. No.
Yeah. Did you ever see when Dave played a white guy?
Oh, you think she looks like that?
Yes, she looks just like that.
Just because her hair is blonde, right?
Oh, she looks exactly like that. I saw that, like, as soon as I saw the first preview for it, which I think was on during the Super Bowl, I was like, it looks like Dave Chappelle.
Wait, is that when he, never mind. No.
Like, they do some classic Dave Chappelle.
The film Chappelle's, White Chicks?
Chappelle yeah. Show skit of the racial draft. Oh, that, yeah. Yes, he plays a white guy there. Yeah,
I remember great. That.
Sorry.
That's so high school.
All right. So somehow this film is both a critical success.
Hell yeah.
A financial success.
Yeah.
And it's one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen. And I've seen stuff like Manos in the Hands of Fate.
Well.
And like I said, I am still thinking to myself, did I like this or not?
You know, I think because it kind of presents itself like on the cover or whatever, like it looks like it could be just a normal movie.
Yeah, like a rom-com.
Yeah, and then it's like, actually, this guy is weird and there's really old people in the background all the time with various maladies. And also lots of random screaming for yes. no reason yeah. and prolonged shots.
Not just random screaming, the same recorded screaming. Just repeat it.
Yep. Yes. And and everyone you love from Twin Peaks.
Everyone.
You know who wasn't in it? Because nobody loves her is Lara Flynn Boyle. So that's why she was not in this movie, because she sucks.
Maybe it was a financial success because he reused sound bites and shots and scenes from the entire
yeah.
movie.
He definitely did.
They barely went to the locations they represented.
It's just like New Twin Orleans Peaks. Group. It is just like Twin Peaks like that, yeah. Over and over again, the same shots and the same sounds.
So, yeah. So, but apparently, like, this started early into the Twin Peaks development. Like, he just finished the pilot and then started making this film.
That's why I think there was some overlap.
Yeah.
Because I know that they were gone from season two of Twin Peaks to do something with the movie. And I think this is this. Because I was reading on Wikipedia about something or another.
So, is that one of, like, the first TV shows that they shot, like, maybe season one and two, like, back-to-back then?
I don't know.
It must didn't be. Give on IMDb. It only gave the year, and it was 90 to 92, right? Or did I say that? It was in between.
Well, you said 89.
91. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
89 to 91 for people who can't hear Mike because he's not talking into the microphone.
He's trying. He's trying very hard.
No, he's not.
He is. All right. So, you know what? I gotta go. I gotta do it. Go around the room. JJ, did you like the film?
I loved it.
Loved the film.
Loved it.
Samantha,
yeah.
I'm assuming you liked the film since
yes.
you suggested it.
Yep.
Mike.
Yes, but I would have liked it a lot more if his shots drag on way longer than they need to. And I get it, like, artistic license.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's a point of no return, and he pushes it in so many shots.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. It's, like, absurd. It just cracks me up.
All right, and then Angela liked it, not like it. I told you! I told you! She looks just like him.
You weren't the only one thinking it.
Can this be the cover art for the episode?
We might have to change it to that. We can use it just this once so people can see the joke we're talking about.
So they know what we're talking
yes.
about. So I would have probably been one of those people who was like, okay, Laura Dern, check. Nicolas Cage, check. Like this premise sounds legit. And would have fully expected this kind of like 80s action. I mean, it's kind of over the top. And but I think that I don't know how I would have been, but I was pleasantly surprised. Like, I really enjoyed it. But I like the awkward scenes, especially like they zoom in on the mouths.
So gross.
Willem Dafoe teeth.
Ugh. Little and nubs, little brown nubs.
She's like, yeah. And he's like, and like it's just right there.
Oh God, that horrible scene. And then he just makes a joke and leaves.
He's like, not now, but maybe later.
Yeah, like assaulting her all for a punchline.
Yeah, you really like, you thought you were gonna get the musical sting, and he was gonna like just run out the door right after.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So long, folks.
And just when he even showed up in the room, he's like, oh, it smells like barf in here.
Yeah.
Are you sick?
Yeah.
Are you pregnant? I'm sorry.
He's like, I'm not gonna pee on your head. I need to use the head. Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
he was just nasty.
My favorite too was that no one cleaned up the puke, but
no, they
I know
just he, left
Willem
it.
Dafoe and Nicolas Cage were like, oh, this place smells like vomit. You've really filled up this place with stink. Like, all right.
So, and I also think the great part about this, the entire movie, is they could have rolled credits at any point that
yes!
movie, and it would have been over. Okay.
It could have been a short film. It could have been over like at the finger point at like 45 seconds.
There, it's like a series of vignettes all smushed together.
So we actually find out that there was a contest and it was give me your most David Lynch and here's the script, you go for it. And it's just people all in a smush together. Well, what killed me, and it was at the end, and he's like, I'm out of jail. Oh no, I can't be with you. And then he walks and gets his ass kicked.
Yes.
By like a bunch of just random people.
Yes.
They didn't have a hit on him.
No. Well, it's kind of like, I think it was trying to lead you to that, like, uh-oh, this is where he gets killed, and it's going to be all Romeo and Juliet. It's so tragic and whatnot. Yeah, and then he gets his he gets beat down by, like, the most ethnically diverse gang you will ever see in your life. Like,
well, and yeah, he gets punched by the whitest kid you've ever seen in your life, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But remember, he doesn't know the difference between dancing and fighting.
No,
maybe.
It's just true. He's like, all these guys want to dance? What's so up?
I'm sorry, oh, I refer to you all as homosexuals.
Again, that's where those like funny conversations. He's like, I'm legitimately apologizing for insinuating that any of you were homosexual.
Yeah,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
But they were already after him before he called them anything.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were like, did you have enough?
They
and
didn't.
They're like, wait, what? Sorry,
and it's funny. It's like they just randomly stopped him. They didn't take his suitcase away from him. They didn't take his wallet.
He did
suitcase.
Leave it for them.
Yeah, I guess.
And
then he thanks them for the opportunity. He's like, you guys have taught me a very valuable lesson today. And they're like, glad you could help you, Nicolas Cage.
They probably didn't pursue because they were like, what?
Yeah, they're probably scared.
Yep.
So I was fully expecting him to go return to them only for them to have been in a car accident and they're both dead.
Yeah. Really?
Me too. Yeah. Actually, I thought that they were.
It is.
There were so many car accidents in that movie.
I can kind of see it now that I was like, well, yeah, there actually are a lot of car accidents in this
movie. Well, there were two.
Yeah.
So that would have been the third.
Oh, there were three.
Missed an opportunity.
No, there were three because on the way back when he was running across the cars, there was one crashed into. On the side.
Oh, no, then there would have been four because the car accident that her uncle died in.
Oh, yeah. And then the one that killed Audrey.
Yep.
And
actually, there were six. That kid's hat.
Yeah, that was a train. No. That was a train wreck, not a car accident.
Yeah. This felt like definitely the end, and watch the end been the first thing they filmed. But, you said that it was done the day before the film festival. The end felt that rushed. It was like, I'm going to go get a half-ass beating from these people, have the good witch come and tell me that she loves you. And you're like, oh, really? She does? She waited 6 years for me? And it takes a witch to tell me? Yeah, like, come on.
It takes a witch to tell me.
God. And then he's like, And then the musical scene starts. So there will be two musicals.
And I am going to stand on my assertion earlier that Nicolas Cage jumped on at least two cars that he was not supposed to that final scene, because some of those actors are like, what the hell? Like, not acting. They're like, oh, God, that really happened.
Or they're just really good actors.
And they kind of sounded... you could hear the step on the car more than the others. Yeah. It's like, okay, so this one wasn't reinforced. He missed his mark entirely.
Yep.
The first time I saw this, I kept waiting for her cousin to come back. Because she said he disappeared, and I was like, maybe this means something, but no, it's just a story.
You know what I honestly thought the cousin was going to do for real? I thought he was going to come back too. I thought it was going to be like... they were going to be in a situation with Willem Dafoe. He was going to have them at gunpoint, both of them, for some reason. And the cousin was going to come back and save them.
Wearing black rubber gloves.
Finally accepting that the alien was him.
I'm making my lunch!
And I also am with you. There was no lines or script for that man. He's like, just put Crispin Glover in a house, see what he does. We're going to film it like Big Brother style, and we'll take what we can use.
And we already said why, right? Why? What was he there? We didn't say that. I mean,
no, we don't know.
There's no reason.
Besides, she's telling a story about her cousin. That's the only story.
I think what she was doing was just admitting that her family is full of psychopaths and they all are suffering psychotic breaks. And he's like, hell yeah, that's sexy.
And he was still smoking one cigarette at that time.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh, wait, I procreated with the psycho. Here's two.
I was going to say, this is one of the, I think they were already starting to get the message in Hollywood that smoking was going to have to go away from movies. So they decided to go to town with this film.
But every brand.
He didn't pace himself.
No.
Yes. I mean, he did start smoking at 4.
That's true.
Yes.
And after losing his mom to lung cancer.
Yeah, and his dad to alcohol-related illness. Yes. So, yeah, he drank like 10 beers with Willem Dafoe at the bar, and then they planned their heist.
Yes. And then he lied and said it was only 2.
Yeah.
Man move.
We saw all those bottles.
He would have to sleep outside in the gutter if I was Laura Dern. You're not coming in this house.
Also, how old was he in this film?
I was wondering that too. My thought is, like, I know she's 20. I think he's maybe between 22 and 25. I want to say he's probably 25.
I think that they honestly number dropped her age to make sure that it wasn't extra creepy on top of everything else.
Well, because he went to jail 2 years before, so she would have been 18 when he murdered that person.
Yep.
Yes.
And they had been dating for a while at that point. I fully believe
had
that.
Had they? We don't know. Like, I guess
it seems like it. At least a year.
Yeah, the hitman didn't say that in the plot.
No.
You guys have been dating for 4 years.
Yeah. I feel like he's a couple years older than her. Yes. And they probably started dating when she was still in high school.
So that hitman score just went to 3.5 to 3 because he left out that vital piece of information.
Yes.
These are just my headcanon, but it makes sense to me.
Like, you made me feel much better because I was like, is this guy like 35?
Yeah. No, you know, I don't think something so. Like that's just how he looks. That's just how Nicolas Cage's hair
well,
looks.
Well, he still looks like that, so.
Yeah.
You start smoking at 4.
Hey, that's true. Maybe he was like 19. He looks remarkably well.
Oh. No, Nicolas Cage has looked the same his entire adult life. Like,
yeah, he's a vampire.
You can see him in, what is it, Fast Times at Ridgemont High? He's in a background shot.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks exactly the same as he does today.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, I'm done talking about this.
Well, okay. Well, since Samantha's done, I guess we're all done then. All right. We'll see you next time, folks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.